Welcome everyone to the Caribbean Science Fiction Network, a celebration of all things fantasy, folklore, speculative fiction, and of course, science fiction.
General idea behind Pete Online, behind the Flying Crapple, is to ensure that we bring those stories to the rest of the world, not to mention keeping our stories alive.
Today I have with me Nicole and Sam of Pete Noir, and we'll be talking about a few short stories from the Flying Crapple.
We founded Pete Noir as a way to encourage Dominican writers to kind of break out more into the genres of science fiction and fantasy.
Nicole and Sam, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having us, Jarrell. It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Jarrell, for having us on the podcast. It's a pleasure. And of course, thank you to your listeners for tuning in.
Yeah, looking forward. We're getting the Dominica based contingent. I'm excited for that as well. So give us a brief history of Pete Noir.
I am one of the founding members. So it was three of us, three Dominicans who were actually in the diaspora. We have since lost one of our members, but it was myself, Lionel Levy, and Ron Deschamps. And we were all writers who were based outside of Dominica, but we all had a love for science fiction and fantasy, and realizing that Dominica has a rich folklore history, and it's very much a part of our culture, we decided that we would try to encourage Dominican writers to kind of break out more into these genres of science fiction and fantasy. So we founded Pete Noir as a way to encourage Dominican writers to start exploring those genres. And we produced our first anthology, which we titled The Flying Crapple, a year later, I believe it was.
The name Pete Noir. Talk us through that. What does it mean?
I'm gonna let Sam handle that one because he speaks Creole better than I do.
Well, Pete Noir, it sort of represents the Dominica has what we call Mont Trois Pitons, which means the mountain of three peaks, essentially. And so Pete Noir is paying reverence to that, if you will. It's basically in recognition of our culture, our Dominica's landscape, Dominica's mountainous makeup, that kind of thing.
And already, you know, I got senses of that throughout the collection. The mountains, the culture, the landscape. In terms of folklore, Nicole mentioned, the collection, The Flying Crapple, being a sort of this testament to the Dominican folklore. And I want to ask you, what kinds of folklore both of you really would have read growing up, or what you would have heard growing up, and also, what is unique about Dominican folklore, as you might identify it for those who would not know?
I think, well, to answer your first question, so we did not read folklore as such. There have been very few attempts, I think, to put it into literary format. But the oral tradition is very strong in Dominica. So we have heard these stories time and time again in various iterations from our elders as we were growing up. Sam has more of a rural upbringing, so he can tell you more about growing up in the countryside and, you know, just gathering together at nighttime and listening to the stories that, you know, his grandparents would tell. From my perspective, I grew up in the city, so our stories were told to us by, like, the elderly neighbors, for example, that were in the communities. But there are certain characters and certain themes that carry through from generation to generation. So, for example, a very famous one is what we would call the Sukuya. So the Sukuya is basically a vampire or a bloodsucker. Yeah. So that those kind of characters have survived generations of oral tradition, oral storytelling, and are still with us today and have influenced some of our writers, and which you will see in the work as well. Each of the islands has something unique or particular to it. Dominica, I think, by virtue of its French colonial background and history, we have elements of the Creole culture, I think, that sort of permeates the Dominican aesthetic. So we have, I think, a bit of that French, a bit of that Spanish, Black, English even. Those elements come together to create the Dominican character and permeates our stories, our literature. So I think what makes us unique is that blend of cultures in the perhaps it, even in the particular way that we were colonized and the way that people groups came into Dominica at various times. It just seems to have made a different sort of synergy for what we are and who we are as compared to the other islands, even within our own geographical area. So we're similar in geography to St. Lucia, St. Vincent, Grenada, but yet we have differences culture-wise. So I think it has something to do with that.
In terms of the title of the anthology, The Flying Crapuno, you know, we have this... Do you all have the saying "crapo, smoke your pipe"? Did you all have that?
Yeah.
So how did you get to that point with the flying crapo?
Yeah. Before I'll take this one as well. But before I get to that, I do want to add to what Nicole was saying in response to Dominica's folklore and its uniqueness. Even beyond that, I think Dominica's folklore is unique in the way that it is told, or the way that it is written. For example, when a Dominican is telling a story or a folklore story, it has this kind of almost local acknowledgement. You know, it's like you could say, well, I know this character, or this character reminds me of a person from my village. It's almost tangible, you know? It's like, and I don't remember getting that same feeling reading stories from other writers from outside of Dominica. Say, for example, reading the Anansi stories, the Brothers Grimm, for example, I don't remember getting that same feeling, because to me, those were just stories written by someone out of their imagination, right? But when a Dominican is writing or telling a story, it's like you can almost feel it. You know, you can feel the person that they're talking about, even if they're not necessarily talking about a real person, but you can still feel it. You can say, oh, that Sukuya is my whatever down the street. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. So that's what, from my perspective, that's where I see it. In terms of the title of The Flying Crapo, it's also, again, to honor our former national dish, which was the crapo. That has since changed over a few years ago, because the crapo had been hunted basically to near extinction. So the flying crapo, as a title for the anthology, is really a way, it's a tongue-in-cheek way of remembering and honoring our former national dish.
What it reminded me of, maybe unrelated, but it reminded me of this, it kind of in keeping with this speculative, the imagining that happens in the short story, in the collection, rather. So you mentioned the culture, and something that resonates throughout a lot of these stories is the indigenous peoples and the indigenous influences in Dominica. And there, in terms of the boiling lake. I want to talk about that because in my own reading, like, I came across it as being described as a sacred site for the Kalinago peoples. And in terms of the supernatural, how did you want to communicate this through folklore? And what about the supernatural exactly you wanted to communicate?
The power of imagination. You know, like, for, you know, that sometimes there are things we think are scary and frightening. We close our eyes. But if we take courage and face those fears, we find out that, you know, it was just our minds, you know, we were being tricked, or our mind was playing tricks on us. And so those things we feared weren't necessarily real or in the first place. And talking about the Horror in Rangpan, which is from The Flying Crapo, the first anthology, this actually is something that actually happened to me. You know, most of it is true. You know, my granddad did send me to the waterfall to get water for him on a very rainy day. I was a kid, and we were always scared, frightened of going back there by ourselves, because we believed there was a tall man out there. When you try to pass through, he would close his legs and whatever, and then you'd be dead. That particular story, I can say a lot of it is true. However, but from my own perspective, the fear of a child, essentially. So this is kind of what I wanted to communicate, that sometimes our fears shrink us down to the level of a child's mind, and we can, that can be detrimental to our daily lives if we let fears and let these things keep us down and prevent us from doing what it is we are supposed to do.
So when I was reading about the Boiling Lake, apparently it's a very difficult place to get to because you have to walk for a very long time. Have any of you all been to the Boiling Lake?
Yeah, man, that's a fun walk, man.
I would like to, but reading on the internet, they say you have to walk for so many miles. I'm like,
nah, man, Gerald. So let me do this right here. I'm gonna encourage you, and also the reason why I mentioned the Boiling Lake in that story too is I wanted to remind people from outside of Dominica, potential tourists, that this is a fun place to go to. This is a fun place to visit and take the scenic route. What I talk about that being the scenic route is actually the scenic route. So, like I said, elements of the story are true. So, don't worry. I don't think the long man really exists. So maybe not. I don't know. But try and see, right? I visited there with school, visited there with friends. So we've done it a few times. Or at least I have. I'm not sure for Nicole, but I've done it a few times.
No, I actually haven't had a chance as yet.
So let me add this. With how great the Boiling Lake is, I love it. I love the whole area, the free sort of trinity of lakes, the Boiling Lake, the Brary Lake, and the Freshwater Lake. My favorite part of that area is the Valley of Desolation. I am fascinated with that area. You know, it's just amazing how nature is and how nature works.
What we have throughout the collection is a lot of, I kind of mentioned, but that emphasis on indigenous culture. And I was just curious, how did the contributors to the collection, how were they, how for the most part, a lot of them connected their stories to aspects of indigenous culture? Did that just happen, or were they like told to do that? I'm curious about how the indigenous elements came together in the collection, and what do you think that speaks to in terms of present day influences of the indigenous peoples?
So the short answer is no, we did not tell them that they had to incorporate those elements into their stories. It happened spontaneously and independently, because we do not write together in terms of the short stories. We might share snippets here and there as we're going along, but we don't have a time, you know, where we're all writing together and we all know what each other is writing. We work by themes. So we will choose the themes and people will select which theme they want to work with. And it just so happens that we ended up with quite a few stories with the indigenous influence. And I think it's because the indigenous peoples and their cultures and their stories have impacted on Caribbean people. So I think that it is just a very organic way that this has happened, that some of the indigenous thinking, the indigenous culture and history and their mythology has sort of seeped into what we produce as well. I do know that in the Flying Crapper one author, Christine Semelda, deliberately selected a creature from, I think she said it's Mesoamerican. I may be mispronouncing that, but basically a Latin American creature of folklore from their indigenous culture as the sort of the villain in her story. So that was, again, as I said, that was a deliberate choice on her part, but we pretty much leave it up to the authors to go where the creative muse takes them. And, you know, you are where you're from. You are influenced by what you have been surrounded by, especially as a child, and the stories that you've heard as a child. So this is the result of that.
Nicole, in terms of there's a story called Foreigner. And I like this one because it was very playful in who might be considered a tourist. And the ending as well was also, it was a strange kind of ending, but in a good way. So in terms of how you were playing with, you know, tourism, who is considered tourist, and as opposed to also travel, how were you inspired to write about tourism in this way?
Okay, thank you. So this story was actually inspired by a news article. I am very interested in science fiction, probably more so than folklore. So that tends to be my focus, and my stories always have more of a sci-fi angle, which is intentional on my part. And I came across a news article about a particular galaxy that was literally disappearing. And the way it's described is that this galaxy, the stars are being consumed by dark matter. And dark matter, you know, for those who are maybe not so familiar with the term, it's basically the way scientists explain areas of space that, you know, they can't identify. So this place is literally being consumed by this dark matter, and the stars are disappearing out of this particular galaxy. And that sort of led my mind into some strange places. What would you do if you were in a place that was literally being consumed? And you can draw a parallel with those of us in the Caribbean who have to deal with hurricanes and storms on a yearly basis that can literally come in and consume, you know, your country. And then you have the concept of refugees. So these people in this galaxy, where would they, what would their options be? Would they sit back and accept their fate? Would they try to escape? And if they did escape, where would they go to? So of course, Earth being, you know, the hot spot for all science fiction stories, I've placed this visitor, this traveler on Earth, where he meets a young woman who is also going through a journey leading to her expiration. So that's where the story idea came from. It actually it's ripped from the headlines, at least from the science headlines. And the idea that, as you say, you know, it's a play on who's a foreigner, who's a tourist. Mm-hmm. So what we have in the story is a Dominican woman who meets this man who she feels is a foreigner because she believes he comes from Europe, some part of Europe. And how she sort of regards him with a bit of caution and wariness because he's strange to her by virtue of being either German or Swedish or Norwegian or wherever it is she thinks he's from. And he, on the other hand, is a foreigner to all of Earth. What are the commonalities that we share as humans, but also perhaps as species dealing with the inevitability of death? So that's kind of where that story came out of. It was ripped from the science headlines.
Another story you lived. We have to talk about that one because that one also, it drew in my attention. And I wanted us to talk about that one. I suppose, yes, the inspiration, but also how that sort of contributed to the overall, or added to the overall feel of the collection.
All right. So, Yulev, I don't know if you've ever read, or any of your listeners have ever read Farewell to the Master. That's a book by Harry Bates. It was published a long time ago, somewhere in the 1940s. And that's actually one of my very favorite science fiction stories. Not only that, it later became a very popular movie called The Day the Earth Stood Still, which has had two iterations. But so that's one of the inspirations behind that story, behind Yulev, because in Farewell to the Master, there's an investigative reporter essentially investigating the sudden appearance of a ship outside the United States Capitol with an 8-foot-tall robot and a man, a human-looking man, exit the ship. And the man only manages to say his and the robot's name before he's shot and killed. And I wanted to write something that is not just drawing on folklore, but also has a science fiction tied to it, but from a Dominican perspective. So my thinking was, well, what if a family, an alien family, comes to Earth and lives on a mountain for years without being bothered, without being harassed, in secret, essentially, and no one knows who they truly are. Everyone thinks they're human. They just live in isolation, so they're kind of weird, like me, you know. But then what if suddenly they pick up and just leave without explaining to their child what is going on? And then later he finds out that, well, he's an alien by his dad leaving him a recording because, for whatever reason, he doesn't really know why his parents didn't tell him the truth before. But now, and he's so, what do you do with that? As the person who just learned that you are not even human. Even if you had signs, you had that something, you are strange, you are different from another human, you can hear at over long distances, you can see further, all of that stuff. But as a child, you probably won't put that together, right? And but when you grow up and you later find out these truths or perceived truths, do you believe them? Especially they're not coming from your father who is right in front of you. And you can question him, right? He leaves you a recording. Who does that, right? So do you believe that? So this Logan is essentially left to sort of figure it out on his own. And then his father does leave him a clue, tells him, go see this person. Yeah. I won't tell you who it is, but so, you know, they're listeners anyway, so they can go get the book and read it. But he's got to go see someone. And who knows? Maybe he'll find out the truth. But That's the inspiration and the idea behind Yulev, which is, by the way, a word I made up. So,
did you know you were satisfied with the name? Like, I'm always curious about make up words, and how did you know that was the one?
You know, I went back and forth maybe about 10 or 20 different words. Some words that I knew that exist, and some that I just completely made up. I just put a few letters together. And then, so I actually looked up in the dictionary if the word Yulev exists anywhere. And then I also wanted something that is not very far from Earth, something that is completely outside of Earth. Because I wanted also that when you pick up the book and you look at the title, you realize that this isn't talking about Earth. It's talking about somewhere else. But you got to read the story to find out where is that somewhere else. So that is why I settled on Yulith. And, you know, I guess it worked out well.
I'm naturally drawn towards the science fiction stories because I also like Robot Fido, because we just get those sort of common that common feel of science fiction, but still it's presented in this fresh kind of way. And I want to ask about that intersection then of the technology and the folklore, because you know one has a common association with being quote-unquote primitive, which is folklore, whereas technology you wouldn't necessarily associate it with folklore. So how did that story sort of fit that connection then between technology and the folkloric?
Well, just for your listeners, the idea behind Robot Fido is that this elderly couple has lost their dog to a poisoning. And they decide, or the husband decides, that rather than they have to go through that sort of agony of, you know, raising a puppy and training it and then losing it in that way, he's going to replace it with a mechanical pet, which is sort of like this latest craze that's going on in the city of Rosa, where I placed the story. So I wanted this story to have a very familiar feel, as you say, the folklore sort of angle. It wanted it to be very much average Caribbean couple, you know, in an average Caribbean town or village, or, you know, it's a typical Caribbean home, maybe from the 80s. So I made sure to include some elements that maybe perhaps Dominicans in particular would appreciate, you know, so the idea that he's drinking cocoa tea as he's reading through the manual for this technologically advanced pet, this robotic pet. So I wanted the juxtaposition of the mundane, or, you know, as relates to Caribbean life, with this very cutting edge technology. So that, I think that's, for me, that's where the two are compatible, is that, yes, we are still who we are, but we can also grow and evolve in terms of our thinking, in terms of our technology and the way that we use technology. So I have this senior, this Caribbean senior man who typically you wouldn't think would want to have anything to do with, you know, a computerized dog. But he's willing to change. He's willing to adapt, but he's still holding on to his food. You know, he's still holding on to his culture. He's still holding on to his language, his way of life. But he's willing to incorporate this new technological advancement. So for me, that's where the intersectionality occurs.
So for those listening, there are at least two collections, right? There's a Flying Crapo one, and then there's a second collection, which is subtitled From Folklore to the Future. Based on that first collection to the second collection, what kind of changed and what remained the same from the first one to the second collection?
The first one, I think we kind of talked about tying folklore to science fiction, fantasy. And I don't believe we had themes. We didn't have any themes. What we did have was sections in the first one. So you have like, I can't remember exactly now, but you have like the incubator and and so forth, which was basically a way of giving young writers an opportunity to be published in the collection. And so they could basically write about anything that they wanted to, because in fact, one of the stories in there has nothing to do with folklore or science fiction. This was written by a 14-year-old at the time. And so there's The Crucible, which has the subtle heading of culture is born out of the heat of oppression, and so on. So that was kind of different with the first the first collection. On the second one, we decided to be a little more focused, and we all agreed to focus on directly on the science fiction and the sci-fi part of the stories in and sort of incorporate our folklore into those stories. For me personally, I always believed that what we call folklore is what North America calls science fiction and fantasy, and what Europeans or Greeks used to call mythology. I think we just sort of call it folklore. Folklore really means local. It just means local stories or what the people tell each other from the oral tradition. So the whole general idea behind Pitonwa and behind the Flying Crapo is to ensure that we bring those stories to the rest of the world and tell the rest of the world, hey, look, you know, Dominica and the Caribbean, to an extent, has the same genres. We have the same genres. We may call them something different, but here they are, and you can read them too. You know, just like we grew up, some of us grew up reading the Brothers Grimm, reading Hansel and Gretel, or the Piper, and all of that stuff. Those were stories from outside our homeland, which came in and helped influence some of us. So this is what we are hoping that our collection, our anthology can and will do eventually, not to mention keeping our stories alive. And by the way, as I'm here, I'll just say that we are working on a third volume of the Flying Crapo. So you're going to have to look out for that.
So we were pretty much at the end, but is there anything else you wanted to talk about? Anything else you want to mention before we close?
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you so much, Gerald, for giving us this platform to be able to tell people that Dominica is also a producer of science fiction and speculative fiction and folklore. Mm-hmm. And we would love for everyone who's listening to just go head over to Amazon and look up The Flying Crapo. And as Sam says, we are working on volume 3. Very excited about that. We've got fresh voices and fresh perspectives and new themes. So there's going to be something for everyone. So we're very excited about that. And thank you so much for allowing us to have the opportunity to tell your listeners about it.
To add to Nicole, just say one of the other things we are hoping to do to encourage young writers to take up science fiction writing and tie the folklore into it. And, you know, we can maybe create something new and unique.
Yeah. You take that to the bank. And I mean, you say spread your wings, it's called Flying Crapo, right? So it has those.
Exactly.
I know, I'm sure editing is, you know, it's hard work, but I could imagine. But, you know, people are definitely looking forward to it, I'm sure. So we need this, you know, we need the other voices. I want to thank both of you, Nicole and Sam. This was really good chatting with you. And to everyone listening, continue to stay tuned to the Caribbean Science Fiction Network. Bye.